start that. I didn't need correcting.
Shut up!
Order!
Order! Let's start off as we need to go on.
We can see a better future.
So it's not a competition who can shout the loudest.
Ho ho, hello, and welcome to the Left Wingers podcast. I'm Brandon.
And I'm Kathleen. We're glad that you decided to join us for our holiday special. We are lucky enough to be joined in the virtual presence of three left-wing activists and friends of the show, Adam Allnut, Will Barber-Taylor, and Lauren Davison.
Would you like to introduce yourselves?
Hello, I'm Will. I'm the host of the Debated podcast and also the Uni Outreach Officer for West Midlands Young Fabians and Chair of the University of Warwick Young Fabians Society. And I'm very glad to be on the podcast with some other great Young Fabians.
Hi, I'm Lauren. I am on the Open Labour National Committee. I sit as co-policy officer and I'm also secretary of the Young Fabians Criminal Justice Network. It's really great to be back.
Finally, I'm Adam. I'm a former chair of the Young Fabians. There's a lovely little get together of the Young Fabian crowd and second time on the show. Love it.
It's going to be a challenge to make it better than the last because our Young Fabians episode really popped off. So that's a nice challenge to see how we do. Okay, we're going to jump straight into it with a question to warm us up for whinging on this cold December evening, and it is freezing outside. If Boris Johnson was a Christmas food, what would he be?
One thing he wouldn't be was be a pig in blanket, because that's like the king of a Christmas dinner, and so he wouldn't be that. Just straight off the bat, he might be, maybe he might be some of those like bits of party food which just get left out to go stale.
Very harsh, but very true.
Harsh.
Part of the brown buffet that we've all experienced at Christmas.
You know when kids are really small and Santa comes to visit them, but obviously he eats half of the snacks that you set out for him because you want to be like a good child and get all your snacks out. Like I'm thinking carrots, I'm thinking some kind of milk. So I think that Boris Johnson is the leftover, like little chunky carrot that's been a little bit eaten by Santa, but Santa was quite busy, so he couldn't eat all of it.
Very nice.
I think that he's stuffing because I think he's stuffed.
Oi! Points to you.
I was going to literally say, I think he is Christmas pudding because people just go on and on and on about it. And actually, it's just a little bit naff. Like, it's not nice. No one really likes it. Don't think half his backbench like him, so...
Mm. Well, you've just stolen my answer, but I would have added on, and he's someone who's engulfed in his own flames, to be fair.
I was going to say...
Is he flammable as well? Is that also the point?
Flammable at the moment.
Flammable man.
Flammable
man. Doused in brandy, and just ready for a match to be flicked at him.
He's at the centre of every party. There we go.
So our episodes can be, unfortunately, because of the news, depressing and horrible because we cover what is going on in your lives and what's going on political news throughout the country. While we try to make it upbeat, sometimes it just isn't. So with fostering a Christmas spirit, everybody here has bought a positive news story of the year that we can talk about and something that's happening and that was positive and that in some way has helped or enriched our lives. So let's go to Lauren first.
Yeah, so I saw an article, it was in The Guardian in February, and it was basically, the headline was, Uber drivers have been entitled to workers' rights, the UK Supreme Court rules. So, you know, for those that don't know, a lot of companies like Uber really exploit their workers and say they're self-employed, so they can get away with not providing certain rights, entitlements, minimum wage, holiday, etc. But the UK Supreme Court dismissed Uber's case earlier this year. And now Uber drivers have workers' rights, which is bloody lovely.
That's a really good one, Lauren. I think this has been going on for a couple of years with, I think it's the GMB have been the main union involved and Uber, but that definitely wasn't something done overnight. That's been, I think, years and years and years of negotiation.
Do you think that the pandemic has kind of, sorry, I said pandemic in the positive episode, but do you think the pandemic has kind of like pushed along a lot of these fights for workers' rights because it's really brought them to the foreground and actually made a lot of workers, I think, look at their lot and say, do I actually deserve to be treated like this? Should I be paid more? Should I have better working conditions? I don't know about you, but I've got that impression over the last kind of year and a little bit. And that's why I think we've seen so many cases of workers banding together and actually, you know, making some progress on workers' rights issues through their trade unions.
Well, I think it's definitely brought to light the importance of having rights at work, of having sick pay, of having, you know, a job where you can, if you're unwell or you know you can't go into work for some reason, you don't just expect to be fired or you're not working in unsafe conditions. But I think it's also highlighted how many of us maybe thought we had important jobs and then the pandemic came and realized actually doctors and nurses and, you know, people who stack shelves and other things like that, how important they really are.
Anybody else want to add to that?
As part of the many things that I do within the Labour Party, as we all do and spend most of our lives doing, is I'm the political officer for my trade union branch. So I'm a member of the GMB. And we actually had the guy who unionised the Uber workers come and give an hour-long talk on how they did it, basically. And they did it through brilliant organisation, through talking to talking to the different Uber drivers and working together. It's all about unity. It's all about GMBs using its authority to bring people together and using the weight of workers against what is a global conglomerate that's, you know, monopolizing the trade all across the world. I think this story really highlights the value of the trade union movement and how it can actually still in the 21st century be a force for good, not just in political parties but actually in the real economy.
Will, do you want to add to that, or Lauren, do you want to come back? Okay, Will.
Yeah, build on Adam's point, and I think it's fantastic that, you know, this is a story that is reminding people of the importance of trade unions and, you know, illustrating how they are very much still an active force in modern politics, and they aren't something that is just associated with the past of British politics. Trade unionism is very much alive in Britain, and it's something that should be, you know, given as much support by everyone in the Labour Party and across British politics, you know, as much support as possible.
We love to see it. Join your union if you haven't. It's a lovely present for yourself. Treat yourself.
Give yourself the gift of solidarity today.
It's a shame we don't write jingles for the trade union movement, because I think we could really come up with something like quite positive and Christmassy, some kind of Christmas music.
This
anyway.
Is just going to turn into one giant brainstorm.
Yeah, I just want to say there's like a lot to do still, because you've got sort of Amazon delivery drivers, loads of other companies, big multinational companies, still completely taking the mick out of their workers. So, you know, it's one small step towards hopefully some level of meaningful change for the gig economy, restructuring it and making it less exploitative.
Okay, I'm going to take it up next, and I'm going to go to a story which came out in April. So it's a little bit earlier in the year, and it's NASA being able to create oxygen on Mars for the first time. So NASA's Perseverance rover has actually been able to separate the oxygen from the carbon and the CO2 molecules on Mars. And that has kind of, it's one first step towards potential human habitation of Mars. And I just think it's a really cool story. And a lot of the stories that we might talk about today and we could have talked about are technology based. And I think this year has been a really great year for science.
I like that. Brandon, would you ever want to go to Mars?
Not a chance. It's someone else's dream. But I love that that might become a possibility in the next few decades. It's coming ever closer.
Would anyone else want to go to space?
100% yes. Definitely. 1,000,000%. I think that the race to commercialise space, to democratise it, and non-professional astronauts into space, exploring it, enjoying it, using it, is so good. And you know, I'm a bit of an Elon Musk stan, so I love Starship. I love the whole, you know, him saying that in the next 5 years he'd be surprised if we're not landing quite often on Mars. And the democratisation of space and growing beyond. Yeah, I think just to quote him a little bit, you know, the future is just more exciting if we're a spacefaring species. And I couldn't agree with that more. And I'd like to see the UK doing so much more. And this year really has been a breakout year for space travel. One thing on that as well is the telescope, which is going to go up on Christmas Eve, just as another advancement for science, the next Hubble telescope that's going to go up. It's going to further expand our understanding of the universe, going to further enlighten generations to come on the magnificence of space. I love it.
Didn't that we hear somebody singing the praises of Elon Musk on this podcast? But what he has done in the past year, you know, whatever you think about him, it has been incredibly impressive. And his company as a vehicle for space travel has made some very big leaps, pardon the pun, over the past year.
I'd love to see states doing it. I'd love to see countries doing it. But unfortunately, NASA relinquished its responsibility to send people into space, and there's no other countries, no other governments that are actually investing in space travel. So, you know, it just has to be him. And yes, he's a bit weird. Yes, he's a bit of a dickhead. Yes, well, you know, he's a billionaire and billionaires are bad. But, you know, there's no one else doing it. And so I'm just happy someone is.
I think that's a whole other episode in itself. Oh, well, Elon Musk, hey or nay? Or not? Elon Musk.
I love that.
Elon Musk, the addition. Well, maybe we can schedule that for next year if the viewers want it.
Yeah, no, I think I was just going to say that, you know, it's just such an important thing to do, is the exploration of space, not simply because you're pushing, you know, mankind's achievements beyond the stars, but also all of the technological achievements that have been, you know, developed because of space travel. Space travel has helped us to do things on Earth that we wouldn't have been able to do without going into space and without stretching human technology. So I'm just, you know, think it's fantastic that we could be going to Mars and having some, you know, breathable atmosphere on Mars in the not too distant future. I think it would be a great thing to achieve for humankind.
I think building on that, I always think that I think climate change is probably the most important thing that us as a species are going to have to deal with, whether we have a livable planet. And, you know, my view has always been that if the further we push out into space, the more people will look back and go, actually, we should be protecting that little green and blue lifeboat in a sea of black, because that's the same thing that happened after we went to the moon. And those first images came back of the planet Earth just in a sea of black and a sea of darkness. And I think that the more people that get to go to space and the more basic exploration we do, the more we will realise that how valuable planet Earth actually is. And it's not some infinite thing that we can just keep taking resources from. It's a thing that's super important and very finite.
I have to be honest, I'm not very clued up on it, and I'm more than happy to say that, but it's pretty cool, isn't it? Like, that's as far as I can go. But, yeah. Crack on, lads, do you know what I mean? It's always good, isn't it? So, yeah.
I love that.
So, my story is a bit of a throwback to a Left Wingers episode that we did in the beginning of the year, which was based around the Channel 4 drama series called It's a Sin. So, we had Richard Angel on, who is head of campaigns at the Terence Higgins Trust, addressing the stigma of it in society and how we can defeat it. But as a result of It's a Sin coming out, the Terence Higgins Trust, you know, really, really benefit from it. They raised over £500,000 because of those last t-shirts. I think I've got one. Brandon, I think you might have one as well. I don't know if Will or Lauren have one, but it was basically those t-shirts that said La on it, which is what one of the characters wore, which was then kind of sold off en masse and has now become a bit of a cool style thing to wear. And on top of that, they in one week managed to get out 8,000 tests for HIV AIDS, which means the most people who have ever been tested in the UK were tested, you know, following that week, following those episodes. It's just, it was only meant to be like a kind of drama on Channel 4, but it, you know, we spoke about the time it moved everyone and it was pretty fantastic. So well done to that team for doing that.
If you'd like your own La t-shirt, please do Google Philip Normal to get his shop online. He is a small business owner, and when he first put it out, he was only hoping to sell a couple of hundred t-shirts. He ended up raising over £500,000 for Terence Higgins Trust. And like Kathleen said, it became a fashion statement and an iconic brand t-shirt, and all power to him. It was 25 quid for a t-shirt. He took a fiver for the costs. 20 quid goes to Terence Higgins Trust. And I think at the beginning he was making a loss. He's actually making a bit of a loss on the t-shirts. And after he managed to sell the 20,000 t-shirts that he did sell to get up to the £500,000, pretty sure my maths is right. Someone can tweet me to tell me I'm wrong. He's done a really good job.
Yeah, I think it's a really important story, actually, and a really important topic, because it was absolutely groundbreaking to educate people about what happened in the past, how people were treated, how they were stigmatized, how they were affected. I don't think I've seen a piece of television that got to me as much as that did. Like, I remember just being in floods of tears at various points. It was so beautifully done. and sensitively done, I think, as well. It's so important, like just with things like LGSM as well. So many young LGBT people, maybe not through any fault of their own, because an entire generation lost so many members before them as well, haven't always been told the important stories. They haven't seen it, or, you know, you're told something, but actually seeing it visually depicted on your TV is something completely different. Whether it's people that died or people who did live through it, or whether it's women like Jill who looked after people as they lay dying, there's so many different elements to it that just, I think, have enriched people's understanding completely of HIV/AIDS. So yeah, I think amazing, just amazing piece of television all round, and just so important.
Yeah, so I'd just like to echo some of the comments that you made, Kathleen, about how the documentary had a real life impact, in that not only did it raise lots of money for the Terence Higgins Trust, but it raised a lot of awareness about having HIV in the present, and things that you can do in terms of medication that you can access. PrEP is something that I believe a lot of people didn't know about earlier this year. And through that drama series, that drama documentary, and the work of the Terence Higgins Trust, a lot more people have been able to access medication such as PrEP. And that can only be a good thing, because that will save a lot of lives. It will prevent a lot of new infections. And, you know, that is a real positive to take away from something so terrible that happened over many, many years.
Yeah, I think just to echo what everybody has said, you know, obviously an incredibly important story to tell, and helping with awareness of a disease that, you know, can just have devastating effects, not just on the lives of people who live with the disease, but also those who look after them and their family members as well. And I think what it really showed is just the sheer power of drama, is that in some ways through drama, whether it be television or novels or whatever, you can get a message across sometimes perhaps to people who aren't as engaged in politics or engaged with particular issues, and you can get them, you know, to really understand a particular issue and to become supportive and aware of that issue. And I think it just shows the power of great drama, and why we have to, you know, support public broadcasting and ensure that there is a broad television landscape that can allow for such compelling television to be aired. Okay, so the story that I found, it came out in October, and it was the World Health Organization recommending the use of the RTS malaria vaccine for children in sub-Saharan Africa. And I think it's such an important news story, because in sub-Saharan Africa and around the world, there have been millions of cases of malaria. In 2019, there were 229 million cases. And sadly, nearly half a million people lost their lives in 2019, two-thirds of which were children that were younger than five. And I think that, you know, this is something that shows, as Adam and I think everybody else has mentioned, and Brandon mentioned as well, the sheer power of science to improve people's lives. This is a vaccine that, when it is disseminated throughout you know, sub-Saharan Africa and the rest of the world, will genuinely save people's lives. And it's just a fantastic thing to think that one piece of advancement, one vaccine, can do so much to improve the lives of millions of people and help combat such a virulent and horrific disease.
I think this just builds on this pro-science, pro-vaccine theme that we're really building up. Like 2021 going into 2022, I don't think in the last few years I've ever been as confident that the population at large is more trusting in science. There's obviously like Piers Corbyn and all these other people who don't need to be mentioned, who are fighting against free thinking and science trusting populace. But in general, it feels like a corner has been turned in some way, and we actually are looking at a future which is of people who actually believe in science. And there's a bit of pushback from scientists. I was involved in Extinction Rebellion for a while, and a load of scientists became part of Extinction Rebellion because they kept putting out papers. They kept saying stuff was really bad, but no one would ever listen to them. So they just laid in front of things and glued themselves to stuff to say, look, I literally have a PhD. And I've been telling you this, but no one's listening. So someone listen. And I think we may have sort of finally got to the point where people are taking note and actually listening to the science for once.
I think the case of the malaria vaccine is so significant, just in terms of even the development of sub-Saharan Africa, because it's definitely not been the only thing kind of preventing development in that part of the world, but it has been a contributing factor. And it's really important that now the rest of the countries of the world pour money into distributing this vaccine so that it can do the maximum good possible, and ensure that, you know, we're looking at in 20 years time a world which is free from malaria deaths. That should be the goal of all of the world's countries, because money should not be a barrier to whether or not a country can access vaccines and medical equipment. That should be something that we all aspire to be able to distribute across the world so that we can help save as many lives as possible. And I hope that that happens with the malaria vaccine, and I hope that we see some real progress really quickly.
Not much to add, like, after what everyone said, but, you know, considering it kills roughly about 500,000 people a year. So if we look at the kind of death tolls from COVID, I'm not to diminish obviously what COVID's done, but you have to put into perspective that we're shocked but by the big numbers dying in this country. People don't really pay attention if it's somewhere else. So it's really good to see that it has been approved and it is going to be rolled out, even if it saves, you know, 20,000 people, that's, especially kids, that's got to be good.
So I think the winners of this, of 2021, were the scientific community and the scientists. So, you know, well done if there's anyone listening that's a scientist. I know there's one person listening who's my mate, who always listens to this podcast, who's doing a PhD in Southampton. So I clap for her all the time, but we're thinking of you. And anyone else who knows a scientist or is listening that has a background in science and is doing things to improve the lives of people through creating vaccines or distributing them or anything to do with life-saving technology, thank you very much for your hard work. And we can't wait to see what you brainy people get up to in the next few years.
Adam, have you said your positive story?
No, but I think science has been covered quite thoroughly, which I love. And so I was going to talk about Starship, and I was going to talk about Elon Musk and the new space race and democratizing space. But that we've done that. And I've just got to say it again, which is great. And so what I was going to talk about is from the perception I get from this year is the pushback from the social democratic political wing and the centre of the left and the centre left. You know, this year has had so much in it. We've actually forgotten that at the beginning of the year, Joe Biden was inaugurated as president of the United States, taken over from Trump. And then to bookend the year, we now have the Social Democratic Party with the Greens and the Free Democratic Party in a coalition in Germany, and, you know, with aims to get rid of coal-fired power plants by 2030. There was a re-emergence and a reopening of other coal-fired power plants in Germany under the CDU. And it just seems to me, and with other elections in South America and in the UK, Keir Starmer now finally having a half-decent poll rating. You know, it feels to me, and, you know, by any means, I'm looking forward to people chipping in here, that around the world, we're actually seeing a pushback against far-right radical message with messages of solidarity, with a sort of centre-left social democratic message of progressive values, you know, more environmentalists selected to parliaments all over the world. Yes, the COP26 didn't quite go as we wanted it to go. There weren't as many commitments, but it was the shock that everyone had that there wasn't more done was the thing that I really enjoyed about it the most, because it shows that the Overton window has moved on progressive values, on the environment, on workers' rights and everything else, not just in this country, but in other countries around the world. And it gives me actually a bit of hope for the future, that actually we're ending the year on a bit of a high. The Chilean elections are happening right now. Whether we have a second Bolsonaro in South America or not, we'll know by the time this goes out. But I think we have a reason to be hopeful and a reason to be cheerful, to coin a phrase.
It's the wrong podcast,
Adam. But I think moving forward, we have a reason to be hopeful for the future, which I don't think we've actually had for a little while. So I think we're in a good place.
What I would say is that I feel positive that people are, not everybody, of course, but a decent part of many of the world's populations are rejecting right-wing populist rhetoric. And I think that's because we've seen how right-wing populist leaders behave in government and how simply they are not fit to rule any country in the world. And I think this pushback comes directly off the back of the right's failure in many countries to actually lead a country for the better. And, you know, it's coming a bit late for us in the UK, I think, but hopefully with the Boris Johnson stuff that's happening at the moment, we're maybe having a bit of a wake up and a bit of a flashpoint kind of moment in this country where maybe we will see a rejection of right-wing populism. And I hope that we do see that in the next year. We're not onto our predictions episode yet. That's for the new year, but that is what I hope to see happen.
Yeah, well, I think it's always good to be positive and to look forward to things. I think one of the things that Adam mentioned, we as a podcast haven't spoken about, is the fact that Angela Merkel has gone. And there was somebody, a very powerful woman, who ran one of the most efficient and one of the best economies in the world by most economic standards. And I think really pulled her weight in a trading block. One woman who's been in power for a very long time. And I will be really interested to see who takes over, what they're doing, and what they plan to do in the future, because it just seems like we don't really have it here, but when such a big political titan goes on both a national and a global stage, which is what I think Angela Merkel was, I'd be fascinated to see who, if anyone, can really step into that frame and act the role, or if something completely different happens, and how, you know, as Adam mentioned, they have swung to the left, I guess. But as with everything, there are always problems in every country. There are always political elections. There's always more things to come. They are actually, to be fair, more than us, used to having political coalitions and different types of voting. But there's no doubt about it. She's gone. She's not coming back. And Germany will have to deal with the biggest problems of its time without her. And I feel like I think that's really saying something, actually. And I'd be interested to see what happens the next few years for Germany. I think will be fascinating.
I think biggest challenges since the fall of the Berlin Wall. I think that Germany has a brilliant economy, a progressive mindset. But Olaf Scholz, who's the Social Democratic Party new chancellor, taking over from Angela Merkel after 16 years, is just, like Cathy said, huge shoes to fill. Will he have the power diamond of Angela Merkel to really drive forward the EU around the world? Who knows? One thing I'm really pleased by is the fact that in the Social Democratic Party, Greens, and the Libertarian Party have really strong stance on Russia, which is really, really positive. Being a country in the middle of Europe and having a really strong position against Russia, I think it's really positive. I think in your predictions episode, talking about Russia will be a big, big, big thing to cover.
We might have to take a shot. We might have to get a bingo up for that. But I think, Brandon,
I'm just glad that Olaf Scholz is actually chancellor now, because I don't know about you, but it's felt like forever that Angela Merkel's been leaving. They really know how to drag it out in Germany.
That's right. They have a different political culture. Different electoral.
But she's been there for, what would you say, 16 years? I couldn't imagine doing a job for 16 years. Let alone a very high, intense one. Mm. Although I do have a very funny story about her from David Cameron's autobiography, which I read this year, which, to be honest, is not worth the paper it's written on. I wouldn't recommend it, to be fair. But he does say that they had one of those Chequers summits where, they hash out all the, everything that's going on in the EU, and it's all very negative and whatever. And they go for a walk just in the middle of the day as like a little bit of a lunchtime thing to break up negotiations. And the story he tells is that they get lost about like half an hour in. So he kind of is so focused on speaking to her about the problem of the day and the issue they're negotiating, and that he doesn't actually clock that they're just in the middle of a field somewhere. And then, so he's walking around this field with her, and then he kind of clocks that he doesn't know where he's going. And then about 10 minutes in to realising that, has to tell her, look, I actually don't know where we are. And then what ends up happening through several misdirections is that they end up having to like walk around / jump over, and I'm sure people in the countryside know more than I do, some barbed wire. And Merkel, he said at the time, made some really funny jokes about Germans and English people jumping through barbed wire, and how it like reminded her of like answer, like what like her forefathers did. And actually she's very at home in like a dirty field, and like, you know, all of that kind of like, you know, camaraderie and funny jokes. But he said at the time it was very funny to break up what were quite intense negotiations, and luckily they found their way back to Chequers and cracked on with the work. But
right-wing populists and stuff, I think big part of the issue is, especially on the right, especially in this country, entitlement always rears its head on the right, especially when they're from privileged backgrounds. It's a big part of right-wing populism when they talk about, like the Leave campaign did, how it's the establishment versus the people. And I think there's been a lot of the electorate have sort of taken a second look at the types of populists that have led us during COVID, who have decided the rules that they set for us don't apply to them, or have decided to engage in denialism of science. And they've sat up and thought, are these people really looking out for our best interests? Because they're not, they're the elite, they're not the people. And obviously people have made so many sacrifices during COVID, and the kinds of collectivist solidarity that is so important to progressives and the left just ain't there with the right and populists. So I think that really does explain kind of why they're on the last legs.
No, I think the only thing that I could add is I think it's great that we're seeing, as I think everyone said, a push against the populist right across the world, and the emergence of strong left-wing, centre-left governments in different parts of the world. The one thing that I would like to add, though, is I just realised, because of Kathleen's responses, that of the past three Conservative prime ministers, two have stories involving fields. So I just wonder what Boris Johnson's story involving a field will be. Whether that will come out at any point. But yeah, no, that was the only thing that I could think when hearing that, story.
There's so much coming out at the minute. It might be any day now.
Yeah, it might.
12 days of horror stories. There you go. You might have to open your advent calendar tomorrow, and there might just be another little exclusive by Pippa Creer at the Mirror. You never know.
Okay, so I'd like to thank everyone for your contributions, and it has made me feel all warm and fuzzy inside, and I feel a little bit more positive about the past year. I don't know about you. I'd just like to kind of round off the discussion by briefly referencing this past few weeks' news by asking you, if you were at a Christmas party at 10 Downing Street, what three main guests would you invite and why? Whoever wants to go first, please go first.
I think I've already got it. So
is one of them Elon Musk?
100% one of them's Elon Musk, definitely. 100% Elon Musk, definitely. Olaf Scholz as well. We've spoken about him. Get him in a room as well. That'd be amazing. And then third has to be someone famous and cool. Who would I invite? It should be come back to me for the third. But Elon, Olaf, and then a cool third person who I haven't said yet. Oh, I know, I've got it. I've just watched Love Actually again. Emma Thompson, because she's fabulous. She's brilliant. There you go. They're my three.
Pretty solid.
Very nice. Who wants to go next?
Yeah, I'll go. So I think my three would be Emily Thornberry, standard. Mm-hmm. Adele, standard. Because you could have a bit of chat with her. And also all three of us are Londoners, so I reckon we'd have a really good chat. And then, I want to say Elton John, but I feel like that's something that Brandon would pick. So I don't want to ruin. So I'm going to say Jacinda Ardern to not, because I feel like Brandon will just pick Elton John. But I feel like all three of us, because Jacinda Ardern used to live in London as well. So I feel like we could all have a bit of a chat about London things and hopefully bag some tickets to Adele's next concert.
Yeah, so you almost stole my answer, but I would, of course, choose Elton John. It'd be amazing. Have you seen the, he's brought out a new song with those people who sing about sausage rolls and Ed Sheeran, Wild. I don't know where that came from. Maybe that's something that we could talk about. But yes, it'd be great to have a chat with him. The first person who popped into my head, Barack Obama. I think he's an incredibly fascinating man. He's the last Democrat president who's out of office, and I think he'd have some really interesting stories to tell. And I'm not sure how these three would fit together exactly, but kind of the man of the moment, Tom Holland. So our very own Spider-Man, I would love to have a conversation with him. He seems like an incredibly chilled out kind of guy, and I think it'd make for good chat.
I would invite David Tennant, Paul McCartney and Russell T Davis so that we could discuss how to make a Doctor Who Christmas special episode focused on the Beatles and guest starring Paul McCartney.
Oh, I love that. That'd be really good. Are you a big Whovian, Will?
Yes, I am. Yes.
What do you think about kind of the current Doctor?
Oh, no, I mean, I think that she has given a really good portrayal of the part, though I would say that I think she has been, in some instances, hindered by the writing that she has been given.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's quite a good... Who do you think is going to be next?
I have no idea. Yeah. I think it will just be up to whoever Russell T Davis thinks is the best person for the part. And I mean, he has a really good track record of picking excellent people to play the Doctor, so...
I think Idris Elba could do it, but...
Oh, yeah.
Lauren, have you chosen your three? It is actually really difficult to do this. Like, I set the question and I couldn't actually think myself of three people.
Are we assuming this isn't during COVID? Because obviously I'm not going to do a Boris and take the piss and have a party.
Yeah.
Right, we are assuming.
Okay, so I think my first one's going to be very obvious, assuming she's not already in government. Actually, even if she's in government, why not? Lisa and Andy. Because I would ask her to move her department to Stoke, because we've got lots of towns, six towns, and also we're crying out for a functioning bus network, so we've got it all. I was going to then say Jack Grealish for my second one, but then I realised we don't really extend beyond his having great hair, and I don't know how much that adds to a party, so... probably Bernie Sanders, because I think he would just be fascinating to talk to.
What a change!
And then Ollie Alexander from Years and Years, because I just think he's an absolute sweetheart and got a great voice, get him to do a bit of singing. Yeah, I think that would be a pretty good party.
I'm just imagining how chaotic the party would be if we mashed together all of our three people who we would invite.
No, it'd be good.
That would make it a really exciting evening.
And with that, unfortunately, it's all we've got time for. But we just wanted to say a massive thank you to everybody that's listening, including, of course, our NHS heroes and anyone who's done anything to help other people during this pandemic. We'd love to say a thank you to Adam, Lauren and Will for coming on this episode, for helping us feeling Christmassy. And really putting us in the mood to have a great week. And lastly, we want to say a big thank you to our listeners out there. Yes, that's you. You guys have kept us happy and joyful, especially over this period, but of course, throughout the year. I'll get more emotional in the next episode where we round off for the year. But on behalf of the podcast, we really couldn't do it without you. And thank you for listening to our random thoughts.
Okay. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can like us on Facebook or follow us on our Twitter and Instagram. They're where we're most active, to be honest. And if you would like to, it would help us quite a lot if you could tell your friends about us. It's the main way that we grow our podcast.
Keep whinging, happy Christmas, and we'll see you soon.